Today on the 21st show, the 13th Congressional District is a narrow slice of central Illinois, meant to connect the Democratic parts of Champaign-Urbana, Springfield, and the Metro East. The incumbent Democrat is Nikki Budzinski, who's facing a primary challenge from Dylan Blaha, but our focus today is on the other side of the aisle. Republican Joshua Lloyd is back after losing to Budzinski 2 years ago. Also in the race is Republican Jeff Wilson, a member of the Champaign County Board. Today we're listening to a candidate forum I hosted earlier this month between Wilson and Lloyd. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The primary election is less than 3 weeks away, and early voting is already happening across Illinois. Here at The 21st Show, we've already dedicated 14 hours of programming to in-depth conversations with statewide candidates, namely those running for U.S. Senate and governor. Today, we're zooming in on a congressional district, the 13th. This is a thin slice of central Illinois that begins in the Metro East region, heads north to Springfield, then turns east, goes through Decatur, and ends up in Champaign-Urbana. This district was gerrymandered to elect a Democrat, and so far it's done what it was designed to do. The two-term incumbent is Nikki Budzinski. She is facing a challenge in the Democratic primary from Dylan Blaha. Our home station, Illinois Public Media, has been working with the League of Women Voters and the NAACP to produce candidate forums for both parties. Blaha has been game, but Budzinski has so far not made herself available. There are also two Republican candidates, and they did meet for a forum earlier this month, and that is the subject of our program today. Joshua Lloyd is back after losing to Budzinski in the last election, 58-42. He's an Army veteran who's graduated from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, though a medical condition discovered late in his time there meant he was never commissioned as an officer. The other candidate is Jeff Wilson, a member of the Champaign County Board. He is also a veteran, having served in the U.S. Navy, once as an enlisted man, later in life as a reserve officer. Now, this was a debate-like event with ground rules and a timer. You'll hear me follow up from time to time, but not as much as I would in a usual episode of this program. I'll also say the forum lasted 64 minutes. Our program is just under 50 minutes. Thus, we've edited out several questions as well as the candidates' opening statements, but we did not make any edits within their answers. That said, you can see the entire forum on video on our website, 21stshow.org, and on YouTube. Just search for Illinois Public Media. All right, we're going to start on domestic policy and the economy, which is something that voters say is an issue that is most important to them still. Let's begin with tariffs. What do you think of the way President Trump has made use of tariffs? And Joshua Lloyd, I'll begin with you.
Yeah, so on tariffs, President Trump has implemented more or less a equal tariff on nations that are imposing a tariff on the United States. And why that is occurring, many of these nations were implementing these high tariffs to receive extra tax from the U.S. taxpayer on the goods that are shipped to their nation. But we are not receiving that money back when we when they ship their goods to us. For example, Canada was implementing a very heavy tax on agriculture coming from the United States, and they were profiting pretty tremendously. And Trump came in and said, this will no longer be the case. You will no longer take advantage of our farmers. And he put a tariff back on Canada to receive that money back. So they are not able to continue more or less ripping us off. With that said, it's also a bargaining chip to get these nations to the table to negotiate on better trade deals, better financial incentives to trade with nations and for those nations to trade with the United States, as well as to help policy in nations and help align their policy with U.S. strategic interests. So in terms of Trump's tariffs. I completely support them. I think he's doing a wonderful job. It's brought a lot of nations to the negotiating tables. And I'm excited to see where we will be in another year.
Mr. Wilson.
Same question. I absolutely support President Trump's application of the tariff policy. And the United States has always used tariffs for our benefit because the United States of America should be first in the world. Beginning with our first president all the way to our current president, tariffs have been used. They're used basically for three things. One, to increase the income of the United States. And number two, to protect industry and workers, manufacturing, farmers in the nation, and also used as a negotiating tool that redounds to the benefit of the United States economy, the United States workers. So I agree with what President Trump has started, what he is accomplishing, and what he will accomplish.
Move on to another domestic policy that is related to the economy still, and that is health care. Costs have been rising, as they have in so many areas of our economy, but even faster in health care. Republicans have been trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act for years, since it was passed, really. The party has not been able to agree on an alternative. What do you think, Joshua Lloyd, what do you think is the path forward on health care policy?
So if we look at health care in the nation, the Affordable Care Act, it allowed some individuals to get their insurance. But ultimately what it did is it created artificial inflation within the market. You know, you have supply and demand. When the demand is increasing, but you can regulate how much supply there is, you're able to raise those costs. And that's what we saw in the healthcare industry. When the Affordable Care Act was implemented from that time, and I believe it was either 08, 09, the CEOs at these companies, or the stock price, excuse me, increased over 1,200% in some of these countries, or companies, excuse me. In some of these companies, we can't allow that because more or less, if you consider it in a fraud perspective, they are increasing the share price of their stock by regulating how much supply is in the market. And that makes it more expensive for you and me to buy healthcare. It makes it more expensive for individuals to get quality healthcare at a good price. So really, we need to go back to a market-based system. We need market-based reform. And what that looks like is allowing the free market, the invisible hand of the free market, to regulate how much premiums, how much health insurance actually costs. That'll actually bring down the cost of healthcare across the board. But we still need that safety net for some individuals. So what that looks like, it'll look like a lot of negotiation between the Republicans and the Democrats in order to provide the safety nets, but also bring down the cost of healthcare.
Jeff Wilson.
Thank you. We all want to be healthy. We all want the cost, the price for that health to be reasonable. And I agree that healthcare costs, and I've experienced myself, as everyone that's listening here, about the high price of cost and the insurance associated with it, or the high cost. So there's two parts here. You have the executive side, and then you have the legislative side. The executive, through the Make America Healthy Again program, seems to be working quite a bit. And the negotiations for most favored price for drugs seems to be dropping prices on drugs. On the legislative side, we all have to just work together, negotiate on what's reasonable, affordable, and effective for everybody in the United States, but particularly here in District number 13. Telehealth, all kinds of different things can be used to manage cost, but it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of negotiation. And that's what I would recommend. I will be there to negotiate for you so that you can stay healthy, remain healthy at an affordable price, and be there rolling up my sleeves in Congress for negotiation for the right path forward for healthcare.
This next question comes from a member of the League of Women Voters of Champaign County. They say, our region is experiencing historically high housing costs for both home buyers and renters. What pro-housing policies would you support to ensure everyone has a safe place to live? Continuing our rotation, Jeff Wilson.
Everyone deserves and should have a safe place to live that's affordable. Right here in Champaign County, even in the city of Champaign, there's a 97% occupancy, 3% vacancy. There is basically no place to go. And interest rates have right now, the higher interest rates don't incentivize changes or moving up to allow more space. At the congressional level, what we can do is the following. We can work with housing and urban development, gather together both state, local, and federal teams collaborating on expanding housing affordability and housing location. As you know, most housing is governed by county regulation, not federal regulation. So I propose working as a team with state and local to figure out a way to make housing more affordable. And there's incredible great technologies. One great technology is 3D printing a house. Right now, 3D printing is available for building houses. I would like to see that technology develop to make it more quicker, affordable, and efficient for people. And houses need to be located where people work.
Joshua Lloyd, what pro-housing policies would you support to ensure everyone has a safe place to live?
Real estate is one of those fascinating industries in the United States, not because it's necessarily the most fascinating in terms of you know, in a science perspective, but with all the tax regulations and all the policies revolving around it, anyone who is in real estate usually is doing pretty well for themselves. Anyone who is in the upper 1%, they utilize real estate in part of the portfolio. But with that, it also increases the price of housing. So one of the things that these hedge funds were doing was utilizing property as a way to hedge against the market. And they weren't putting any renter in the houses. They were just keeping the house for the ability to retain its value or increase in value over time. But with that, a lot of individuals are not receiving the housing that they deserve, partly because of mental health. There are a lot of individuals in the 13th Congressional District who are mentally ill and do not have a house because of it. So I would really like to see some form of mental health programs for these individuals to get them off the streets and into programs with a clean bed, with a roof over their head, a hot meal in front of them, and being able to receive the health care and mental health resources that they deserve, that we should be providing them.
All right. Another area of domestic policy that has been much discussed this year is immigration and the way those laws are being enforced at the moment. So, Josh Lloyd, I'll start with you. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the job that immigration enforcement and Border Patrol are doing in places like Minneapolis and Chicagoland?
Part of the issue today is all the conflicting media on immigration. A lot of the media is trying to inflame the situation. They are trying to either frame the perspective of immigration as evil or as kidnapping people off the street. And regardless of what you believe, if ICE is good or bad, what the ultimate goal is to not have unchecked immigration within the United States. We are trying to have some type of reform in order to allow the individuals who want to come to the United States legally have a process that is not as complex as it is currently. Some individuals are going through 10, 15, sometimes 20 years just to get their citizenship for the United States. But with that, immigrants do provide a net positive within the United States. You know, you look at Chicago, for example. Roughly 25% of the jobs in Chicago are of immigrants, or the individuals are immigrant born. But also on top of that, a lot of the concern comes down to where the benefits come from. You know, if you have something like Social Security, if they're a net drain, net positive, or if they're feeding into the system. And voter ID, a lot of the conflict comes down to are immigrants who are not able to vote in U.S. elections voting. And the data is all over the place on it. Some people say that it is more than it is. Others are saying it's not even a thing. So I would really like to see more statistical data on if they are actually voting in U.S. elections and where and how so.
Jeff Wilson, 1 to 10, how is immigration enforcement? How do you think it's going, Minneapolis, Chicagoland, elsewhere?
I'm going to say it depends. And the reason I'm going to say that is across the United States, like in Florida or Texas, states administered by Republicans, I would give it a 10. When we come to Minneapolis, rating the effectiveness of removing illegals from the United States, I would say it's about 80 to 90%. And the reason is not because of immigration and enforcement enforcing federal law. It's because of the extreme resistance and hindering and hampering and hamstringing law enforcement from carrying out their law. Everybody knows law enforcement is more effective when we allow the law enforcement, in accordance with the law, to enforce the law. That effectiveness is not as well as it should be, not because of the agency itself, but because of the individuals that are violating the law and not allowing law enforcement to implement the law as written.
All right, we need to take a break. We'll have more from the 13th Congressional District Republican Candidate Forum when we return. I'm Brian Mackey. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to the 13th Congressional District Republican Candidate Forum between Joshua Lloyd and Jeff Wilson. This was recorded a couple of weeks ago at our home station, Illinois Public Media. It's being produced in partnership with the League of Women Voters of Champaign County and the NAACP of Champaign County. Before the break, we were talking about the candidates' views. Before the break, we were talking about the candidates' views on immigration enforcement in Chicago, Minneapolis, and elsewhere. We'll follow up on that now. Should agents be wearing masks and not identifying themselves, not having name tags on? What do you think about that? This is a current, as we are recording this conversation, this is something being hotly debated in the Congress at the moment. What do you think? Masks, no name tags, or change that?
Very emotional. And I know a DHS funding is held up in Congress right now related to that. I could see the advantage of cameras. However, those law enforcement professionals that are serving our country to enforce the law, you know and I know, if they have name badges without masks, then their livelihood, their families, their children, all their friends will be attacked. So because it's so egregious attack on our law enforcement, they deserve to be protected and their families protected. I know it's scary to have someone wear a mask, but also that individual that's enforcing the law has a family. They have children, and they deserve to be protected. If we lived in a perfect society, yeah, don't wear a mask. But we live in an imperfect society, and there are a lot of people that want to destroy those ICE agents and their families. So I want them to be protected. So for me, it's okay for them to wear a mask, because it protects them and their families. The key thing is just obey the law. Just support the ICE agents, and then it will all go well.
Joshua Lloyd, what do you think about the masks and the lack of identification on these agents?
Well, we've seen a series of agents being doxxed by organizations such as Antifa. So it really comes down to the safety of the officer, of their family. Some of the officers were being threatened at their home. Their wife was being threatened. Their kids were being threatened at school. So it's a matter of safety for these officers, you know. They are officers for the United States. They are implementing the laws that we have on the books. It is not their position to, judge the individuals. It is just to enforce the law. But when you are causing fear to the officers who are carrying out the policy, then that becomes an issue. So the masks are a preventative measure to prevent the officers from their duty being deteriorated by organizations such as Antifa, who are actively combating our ICE officers.
I do want to, before we go on, I do want to mention there was a comment earlier about non-citizens voting and facts. One story that came to my attention, just for listeners can make of this what they will. Georgia did do an audit of the 2020 election. Out of 8.2 million voters, they found 20 non-citizens who were registered to vote. So I'm not going to try and do the percentage math on that, but it's pretty small out of 8.2 million for what that's worth. Sticking with this immigration topic, after federal agents shot and killed Alex Preddy, who was an intensive care nurse with the Veterans Administration, President Trump, in response to a question, said, quote, "You can't have guns, you can't walk in with guns," end quote. Preddy was a lawful gun owner. Gun rights groups have been outraged at some of the administration's response to this. Joshua Lloyd, what do you think about that?
I am a very strong advocate for our Second Amendment. A lot of the rules and policy on the books right now, I believe, are infringements against our Second Amendment. But with that said, in terms of the Alex Preddy situation, watching the video, it is very conflicting on the actual perspective on, was he doing the right thing? Was he actively antagonizing ICE officers while knowingly carrying a firearm? Carrying a firearm is a big responsibility. It's nothing to take lightly. So if you're going to carry, if you're going to be out in public with a firearm, you got to carry it responsibly. You got to know the places you can enter. You got to know the situations you can be in. And you got to know when not to intervene in some situations. The situation, I can't say whether the ICE officer or Alex Preddy were justified in anything, but it is very unfortunate, and I don't believe Alex Preddy should have been shot for carrying a firearm. I don't believe anyone should be shot for just carrying a firearm. Watching the video, it did seem like the six-hour firearm did negligently discharged, and it caused confusion for other officers perceiving a threat of life. And that is ultimately why they shot. You can always do the freeze frame and justify actions. You can always do freeze frames and argue against something. But in those tense situations, it is a quick reaction. You can't make a decision over a course of 10, 20 minutes. It has to be instantaneously. So it's really unfortunate, and I don't think he should have been shot, but I will always stand by Second Amendment rights.
Jeff Wilson, what do you think? The president says you can't have guns, you can't walk in with guns. A lot of gun rights groups are thinking that's not the right way to go. Where do you come down on that?
Thanks, Brian. I fully support our Second Amendment and First Amendment. In fact, all the amendments, especially the first 10, the Bill of Rights. Every individual has the right to speak freely. Every individual has the right to be heard. Every individual has the right to protest. And where the laws, state laws, allow it for concealed carry or open carry, every individual has the right to do that. It's unfortunate. It's a tragedy. I'm deeply heartbroken that someone was killed. I do not want to see that happen again. Nevertheless, we all need to realize we should not obstruct law enforcement and from carrying out their lawful duties. I do not know the ins and outs of the case or the precursors that got there or all the emotions and feelings that people felt at that time. I believe over time due process will be exercised according to our constitutional values, and then we can make an informed decision. But I'm not going to be a Monday morning quarterback over this. I just agree it's tragic. I agree it's unfortunate. We have a right to protest, and we have a right to carry. We're allowed to carry. And I support the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, just like the rest of Americans do, and the right to free speech, and the right for law enforcement to carry out their lawful duties.
Another domestic policy issue that has been front of mind in recent years is that of abortion. Jeff Wilson, back to you. Would you support a national law prohibiting abortion, including mailing abortion medicine across state lines, such as mifepristone?
I support the law as written. As you know, there's the Comstock Act, 1800s Comstock Act, that prohibits the mailing across state boundaries or using the mail system to support those kind of drugs. That's the law of the land. I support it. There's also a law of the land that says it's up to the states to decide about a woman's choice. I support the law of the land. At the same time, I support life. I believe life begins at conception, according to the biological process, and life is precious, how it begins, how it's treated, how it's nurtured, all the way from conception to birth, to raising up, to growing up, to old age. Life is precious. I believe it should be protected.
Just to follow up, if a bill were to come before you, yes or no, a national ban on abortion, how would you vote on that?
I would support protection of human life. I have not seen that bill, but I support protection of human life. At the same time, I protect free choice. It's kind of a conundrum, right? Or it's kind of a, there's pluses and minus, but yes, I support life 100%.
Joshua Lloyd, national ban on abortion, including through the mail.
So let's get some of the data in the mix, right? So when we talk about abortion, a lot of the individuals are talking about women health care. But what does that actually represent? So 96% of abortion is elective. What does that mean? That means 96% of all abortions are because the mother just does not want the child. The other 4%, that is everything from rape, incest, to medical conditions such as ectopic pregnancies. And those, I believe, there should be an exception within limits for the procedure. But 96%, just because a mother doesn't want a child. To me, I believe abortion to be murder. I will always protect life. What does it mean when the child is born into a situation that is not ideal? We have to follow up with the mothers and ensure that they are able to grow up in a healthy lifestyle. You know, the child needs to be able to have clothes, have shoes, have a warm meal, a roof over the head. It's not just saying that we have to have the child born and then give up on them. We have to follow through on protecting life all the way from the birth further on.
And would you support a national ban if it were to come before you as a member of Congress?
So I've talked with congressmen. There will not be another bill on abortion. I've talked with several Republican congressman on this exact topic. There is no plan to put any abortion bill on the table within the next 5 to 10 years.
I feel like you're not answering the question, though. If it were, yes or no?
With the exception of rape and life of the mother, I would support a ban.
I want to talk about American democracy and working together in Congress, or fighting the other side in Congress, as happens so much these days. Let's set a ground level here, though, about Joshua Lloyd. I know we've talked about this in the past, but this is a question I've asked just about every Republican I've spoken to in the last few years. Who won the election in 2020, and was it a free and fair election?
So the more data coming out, Georgia just audited the election from 2020, and some sources are showing that the votes were inflated, across the board.
What sources?
It can be anything from CNN to Fox News. So, the news source matters, and so you have to strategically read through the bias. I prefer an organization called Ground News, just because you can see the bias of the news article. But when you have states that are showing miscounted ballots, that can be a cause of concern. But ultimately, I don't think it really matters, because Joe Biden served the 4 years. He served as president. His executive orders went through. And so by all intents purposes, he was president and he won fair and square. Whether you agree with it or not, we will find out more information in the coming months as everything is audited.
Hmm. I did mention that one audit that found 20 non-citizens registered in Georgia. Fulton County's ballots were counted 3 separate times. I guess the reason I ask this again and again is the president has made it a litmus test for his own, sort of a loyalty test for him. Mr. Wilson, what do you think? Who won in 2020? Was it a free and fair election, by and large?
Great question. What did the results show?
You're asking me?
I'm asking you. I mean, obviously, we all know how the results are, right?
Sure. Most of us acknowledge
that. Mr. Biden
won
the election? He won the election.
Okay.
I don't find it as my job or even a hobby to dig into the details, plus or minus. I just look at results on the surface. On the surface, he won. Fine. 4 years later, Trump won. Fine. I remember Stacey Abrams. I remember she screamed to high heaven how the election was stolen from her. Year after year, she screamed that. It's not right. The elections are what they are. And I believe in free and fair elections. I believe U.S. citizens should be the ones that vote in federal elections. And I believe you should have voter ID. So I want us to move forward, make our elections free and fair, consistent, and documented, so that we know what the results are, and then we move on. Because that's the beauty of America. The beauty of America is, we could fight, we could argue, but we all agree that America is a great place to live. Our Constitution is the greatest Constitution on the earth. It's 250 years on the Declaration of Independence. Let's celebrate that. You can remember Abraham Lincoln. This is the land of Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was hated, vilified, et cetera, et cetera. The nation split, but he still became the greatest president the U.S. has ever had. So I agree with democracy and a Republican form of government. Let's take the results as they are and then move on.
Let me reintroduce our program today. We're listening to a Republican candidate forum for the 13th Congressional District in Central Illinois. This is between Jeff Wilson, a member of the Champaign County Board, and Joshua Lloyd. As I said earlier, in order to meet the constraints of our broadcast, we edited out several sections from the forum, including questions on foreign policy. You can watch the entire thing on YouTube and at our website, 21stshow.org. I'll also mention the incumbent in this district is Democrat Nikki Budzinski, who faces a challenge from Dylan Blaha. We've not yet been able to schedule a forum with Budzinski and Blaha. That said, we'll have more from the Republicans after a short break. This is the 21st Show. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to the 13th Congressional District Republican Candidate Forum. This was recorded earlier this month at the studios of Illinois Public Media, and it was produced in cooperation with the Champaign County branches of the League of Women Voters and the NAACP. The candidates are Joshua Lloyd, who lost to incumbent Democrat Nikki Budzinski in 2024, and Jeff Wilson, a member of the Champaign County Board. Before the break, we were talking about the 2020 election results and the fact that President Trump is still obsessing over his defeat, using it as a loyalty test among Republicans and seeking national Republican Party control over local elections in 15 states.
What do you think about the president's decision to pardon everyone involved with the attack on the Capitol building on January 6th?
That's his decision. It is not mine to second guess it.
That's it. You have no opinion, good or bad, as a citizen, just as somebody in America?
I think we all listening here know that presidents make decisions that we may or may not agree with. And pardons is a long one. Even all the pardons that Clinton gave and all the pardons that Biden gave, every president has that discretion. He's elected to use that discretion. How he uses it, that's his decision. It's not my role to second guess it. Even as a congressman, it's not my role to second guess it, because that's not my swim lane. That's the swim lane of an executive. If you don't like that executive, vote for somebody else.
Would you support a law reining in the pardon power? There has been discussion of that. Or a constitutional amendment, perhaps. As you said, there have been bipartisan abuses.
Oh, there's bipartisan abuses at all three branches, whether it's legislative, judiciary, or the executive. And Article 1 is the legislative responsibility. That means that's the primary one, I would think. And we owe it to our citizens to have laws that are fair and reasonable, to manage the money, and to support our state. I would have to look at the details and fully understand it, and could not make that decision on the surface without understanding that, which is part of the deliberative process as a congressman.
All right. Joshua Lloyd, what do you think about the president's decision to pardon everyone convicted of or charged with criminal wrongdoing in relation to the attack on the Capitol building on January 6th, 2021?
It's a very conflicting one, you know. If you look at it from a perspective of, you know, they did break the law. They actively engaged in entering a federal building without the proper permission, proper protocol. So by all means, they were breaking the law when they did it. At the same time, with the coverage on it, we had the BBC sued for doctoring videos of Trump saying to attack the Capitol. No, the initial portion of the speech was an hour before the later half of the speech, but they doctored it. They tied it together and made it look like he was actively trying to encourage people to go to the Capitol, break in, and attack Congressman or Vice President Vance, or excuse me,
Pence.
Thank you. But ultimately, that is his decision. He has the FBI working under him, all the information sitting in front of him. So he does have that discretion. In terms of reining in that power from a legislative perspective, I don't necessarily think that would be wise. That is an executive action privileged to him. Whether it's Democrat, Republican, they all have that ability. They all have that power. And when it comes down to it, if Congress doesn't see a pardon as being wise, you know, they can always come in and say, we're not going to allow that to happen. You know, it's going to take quite a bit of votes, but they have the power to do that.
We're coming to the end of our time together. Maybe we can get philosophical here. And I'll start with you, Josh Lloyd. What do you see as the difference among being a Republican, being a conservative, and being with Trump right now in America? if there is. Maybe there isn't a difference anymore.
There definitely is a difference. When we look at the government and its place within society, you know, some conservatives want to have a more libertarian approach where absolutely no government, you know, all laws are bad laws. Just leave me alone and we can be friends. Then there's the other side of the Republican Party that are saying, you know, we need to have the military and the protection systems in place and to encourage the free market capitalism that we are currently in right now. But with that, there's always abuses in both situations. And it's interesting seeing the different perspectives. There's an organization, I believe it's called isidewith.org. You can actually find out your political mapping, like how liberal you are versus how conservative you are. And it'll actually match you with various political figures on how close you relate to their policy or where they stand on, you know, capitalistic society versus socialistic society, liberal versus conservative. And it's just a really neat situation to see which officials you actually correlate with and, if you had to, how you would vote.
Same question. Jeff Wilson, is there a difference, and what is it if so, or maybe there isn't, being Republican, being conservative, and being Trump, with Trump?
I think there's a great philosophical question. And you could look at both sides. Is the Democratic Party so extreme left that all they are is AOC and Mondani? Or are there actually reasonable people in the Democratic Party? I think there are a few. The Republican Party started, what, 1856? Basically here in Illinois. Abraham Lincoln is the first Republican president, and he became president because he wanted to stop the spread of slavery and ended up saving the Union and terminating slavery. The Democratic Party resisted that every time. You have the Civil Rights Act, the Democratic Party, or the one that came up with the Jim Crow laws. So as far as the Republican Party, I think the Republican Party represents the mainstream of America. We want to live our lives free from government coercion. We want to have prosperity. We want to live in peace. And the Republican Party is a big tent. It has a lot of workers, labor union, all different colors, all different religions, all different aspirations to be an American. I support President Trump because America is first for him and it's first for me. America needs to be preeminent on the earth, and I support that. I'm not talking about means and methods. I'm looking at results. And right now we have the greatest economy that we've ever had. We have the greatest border security that we've ever had. So yeah, I support President Trump. And again, conservatism is following the Constitution as written, following the rule of law, and allowing liberty and justice for all. So I'm all those.
All right. And with that, we have come to the end of our time. So we'll go now to closing statements and just reversing the order we began with. Jeff Wilson, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, NAACP, Legal Women Voters, Illinois Public Media, for allowing us to speak and talk about what's great about America and for this Republican candidate forum. My name is Jeff Wilson, a military veteran. I've served this country, and I actually serve right now in Champaign County on the county board as elected official. I've worked in the nuclear industry for many years in leadership positions. I'm qualified to take your voice to Washington, D.C. I would hope that you would choose me to represent you. We've talked about a lot this day. We've talked about immigration, the economy, philosophical statements. Immigration is a significant issue. We are actually in a border state, even though we're not on the border. Every state is a border state. immigration needs to be handled in accordance with the law. Economy, we talked about economy. I have 8 kids, 11 grandkids. We want us to be successful and prosperous. We want less taxes, less regulation, more industry, more energy, more benefit to our farmers, our first responders. I believe in our Constitution. I will do everything it takes to defend it and protect it. And I'll do the right thing by you to represent you, to take your voice and advocate for Illinois in Congress for District 13. I ask for your support, and I ask for your vote and your prayers, and thank you for this opportunity, Brian, to speak.
Joshua Lloyd, 2 minutes.
First, I would like to thank you, Brian. I would also like to thank the League of Women Voters and the NAACP for hosting this event and bringing us together. And Jeff, even though he's my opponent, we have been very cordial. You know, I don't have any negative comments toward my opponent. With that, I would really like to be your choice for the Republican nominee for the 13th Congressional District. You know, I will bring a perspective for our economy. I'll help reduce that tax burden. The energy sector, education, these are sectors that are the breath, the blood, the brain of our country. And we need to get back to some of the basics that are fueling our nation to be successful, to helping our hard workers, everyday Americans, have a roof over their head, warm meal in front of them, and giving you the lifestyle and the family life that you want. With that, you know, we have the education, we have economy, border security, we have crime and safety, thoughts that need more in-depth discussion on. And I'm willing to bring that discussion to the table and work on your behalf, whether you are Republican, whether you are Democrat, or anything in between. I will represent you, I will speak with you, and I will have a discussion. Once again, my name is Joshua Lloyd. I'm running for the Illinois 13th Congressional District. If you would like to learn more, please visit my website at lloydforcongress.com. That is L-O-Y-D for Congress.com.
All right, that was the end of the Republican Candidate Forum for the 13th Congressional District between Joshua Lloyd, who challenged Budzinski back in 2024 unsuccessfully, and Jeff Wilson, who is a member of the Champaign County Board. This was an edited conversation. You can find the full thing at our website, 21stshow.org, and on YouTube. Again, go to YouTube and search for Illinois Public Media to watch the full unedited version of this forum. It lasts about 64 minutes. I'll mention again, Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, the incumbent Democrat, being challenged by Dylan Blaha. We sought to have another forum with them as well. So far, we have been unable to schedule that. My understanding is Blaha is available, but Budzinski, because of congressional schedules and other reasons, has not yet been able to find a date that works for all involved. We will continue trying, I understand. The primary election, again, is coming up March 17th. Tomorrow on the program, we are turning our attention, as President Trump seems to have done, to the Middle East, where there is a significant naval buildup. It's said to be the biggest buildup of American naval and air power since the Iraq War back in 2003. Will we be striking Iran? That is the question we will be considering tomorrow on the program. We'd love to hear from you about this. How are you thinking about President Trump's military buildup in the Middle East and his foreign policy in general? You can let us know by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. You can also leave a voicemail anytime, day or night. The number is 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. You can find that and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find links to our podcasts. We're also on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Just look us up there. Search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.